publishers and patient simulators, nurses against toxins, reading depression, and we're going to take a look at tuberculosis this week. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show and remind you that you can find a lot of great additional information, follow-up links, and more over at nursingshow.com. Don't forget that I cover things very generally here, but you can always find the links to the original news stories and also all of the additional resource links for every tip of the week all over at nursingshow.com. You'll find a link for the show notes right there at the top of the page, and you can use that to look back at past episodes and check out the information that I present here. You know, it's a community effort, and I really rely on you to help provide guidance on what kind of tips and things you want to see, as well as getting back in touch with me when you need additional information or have found a better resource that I can share with the rest of the listeners. So it's really important that you follow up and take a look at the information. You can also sign up for the newsletter while you're over at nursingshow.com, and that's a great way to get all of the show notes links sent directly to you every week by email, along with a few other special announcements every month as they come up, and it's a great way to keep in touch with the community here at nursingshow.com. Also, if you want to get a hold of me by email, please note my email address for the show has changed. We've had some issues with email, and I hadn't been getting email for a little while, and I realized that there was a problem with the email server on my site. So I've opened up a different email account to try to make sure we get those emails in here. So if you've sent me an email recently, please send it again. I apologize for the mix-up, and you probably wonder why I keep giving out an email address that keeps bouncing back to you. But go ahead and reach me now at nursingshow@gmail.com. nursingshow@gmail.com. I've tested it. It works. I can trust Google to keep things up and running a lot better than what I've got set up right now through my hosting service. So you can go ahead and until I figure this other stuff out, I think nursingshow@gmail.com is a better option anyway. And let me know what you think of the most recent episodes of The Nursing Show. I'll lead off today's news with a look at a story I picked up at medicalnewstoday.com. And this is an announcement that a major textbook publisher and medical information guide publisher is going to be partnering with Laird All Medical Devices. Now, if you know anything about Laird All Medical, they provide a lot of equipment, but they also are one of the premium manufacturers of patient simulation devices, mannequins, patient simulation and training devices. And many of these simulators are very sophisticated now. They can imitate so many aspects of an actual patient, from vital signs to talking to you, breath sounds. And so you could perform all kinds of procedures on these simulated patients. And it's really, I think, a very interesting way to train new nurses and train existing nurses and new procedures to practice already known existing procedures. What do we do, though, when we run out of scenarios or ways to make that training interesting? Many of us who've been through ongoing training that just is the same every single time, i.e. CPR training, what do you do to make that interesting and make it so that you actually get something extra out of it? Well, one of the things we can do with these simulators is update the scenarios. And that's one of the things that is going to be happening. The publisher will be bringing in case studies, actual patient data, and will be assisting in putting together scenario programs that can be added on to the existing setup that you already have if you have one of these simulator devices. Pretty exciting for anybody that's involved in training and education, because anything we can do to spice things up, to make it easier without giving saving us a whole lot of extra time sitting there and programming these scenarios in ourselves, which you can do with these simulators, but a lot of times it can be time-consuming, requires a little bit of a learning curve, and really, who has time for that when everything's getting cut back, and most people that are involved in training offices are and education are making do with less staff rather than more. So we need to really get excited about the opportunity where we can just get new scenarios to add in as a package deal. And that's what I expect to see. We'll have more on this as it develops. Next up is a look at the American Nurses Association. You know, a lot of people hear about the ANA. How many of you understand what they do for us? Are they just a lobbying group, or are they represent nurses nationwide in the United States? But what does that mean? Well, one of the things is I think that they really are responsible for the 10,000-foot view, if you will, that view from above that looks at the big picture and looks at general trends in health and how nurses nationwide can affect those trends and what should we be standing for. And so when they make these kinds of decisions and come out for one thing or another, I like to talk about it a little bit. You may not agree with their stand on these things, and we'll talk about that a little later too. But the American Nurses Association has announced that they are working together with an organization called Safer Chemicals Healthy Families Coalition that is working on strengthening the Environmental Protection Agency regulatory law to restrict more chemicals. You know, as our technologies advance, we don't realize, I think, that many of the things we use, computers and cell phones and MP3 players, you know, the technology that goes into those things, a lot of times has some pretty severe toxic chemicals involved in the manufacturing process. And what are we doing to contain and restrict the use of some of those chemicals? We don't want to stifle innovation and technology. That's not what I'm saying. But we do need to have stronger regulatory oversight on how those chemicals are handled and disposed of safely. And the American Nurses Association has recognized that the numbers of illnesses, chronic illnesses, and other illnesses and injuries that occur related directly to chemicals in the environment are increasing. And they have decided that this is something that we as nurses should stand for, to reduce the numbers of chemicals in our communities and to provide a safer living environment for the people that make up our patient base. So if you agree with stuff like this, you know, you should get on board and follow up. If you don't agree, you should definitely read the article and decide where you come down and then contact your own legislators and let them know how you feel individually. Just because the American Nurses Association comes out for or against something doesn't mean you have to follow in lockstep. But I do encourage you as nurses to be involved in the healthcare decision-making process in your communities at a larger level. And that means paying attention to legislation, both at the federal, but the state and local levels as well, and make sure that you know and are involved in making decisions that will help your community. Finally, a look at postpartum depression. And do we really watch for it? Do we pay attention to it? Is it something that healthcare professionals are trained to even recognize depression in our patients? And there's a study that looked at figures for women and postpartum depression, saying that as many as 13 to 16% of women in their first pregnancy will experience some level of postpartum depression after the baby's born. And for women that are having second and subsequent children, the numbers are even higher, approaching 30, maybe 40%. And this is a number that's alarming, but I think for anybody that stays home with kids is not surprising, especially for the subsequent numbers. It's quite a jar to your worldview and your normal routine to have a new person enter your house, and let alone one that needs round-the-clock care. And so we need to think about how we approach this, and we need to educate ourselves and other medical professionals on how to recognize depression in all of our patients, not just our postpartum patients, but all of our patients, because if we're better trained to recognize depression and the signs and symptoms of depression in patients with whom we have contact, we may be able to refer them to appropriate resources to help them deal with that depression. And it may be counseling. It may be a momentary part of their lives. But they may need some medication support. They may need some more direct support, even being put into an inpatient facility for a period of time. These things are, of course, the extreme end of the spectrum, but we certainly want to help treat depression when we see it. And in order to do that, we need to be able to recognize it. So I check out this article and the study that was done on postpartum depression specifically, but also looking at understanding and recognizing depression at when we see it in our patients. As I said earlier, this week's tip of the week, we're going to be looking at tuberculosis. Just a review for many of you and for students out there studying. This may be something you'll need at some point, but let's take a look at tuberculosis. What are we going to be looking about with tuberculosis today? Well, we're going to be talking about TB in the world around us and where it's found, what we can expect to see, whether you're in the United States or in other countries around the world. Also, we're going to talk about how is TB transmitted from person to person. We'll look at common tests and things we use to diagnose patients with tuberculosis. You should be able to recognize a patient that might have tuberculosis and protect yourself appropriately. We'll talk about treatment, and then we're going to talk about infection control, which goes back to recognizing tuberculosis in our patients. What about the TB in the world around us? Well, I've got a lot of data I've picked up, and I've got links in the show notes for this that will point you to additional information, whether you're in the United States or in other parts of the world. CDC, Centers for Disease Control, and the World Health Organization, WHO, are my primary resources for this. TB is caused by a bacteria, the Mycobacterium tuberculosis bacteria. There's several varieties out there, but the World Health Organization reports that up to one-third of the world's population is infected with tuberculosis, which is scary. But I think that there are so many people with latent tuberculosis infections that are not evident, not infectious. That number is alarming to healthcare professionals, but we should also understand that not every one of those people are actively transmitting tuberculosis from time to time. We'll talk a little bit more about why that is. More than 1.3 million people die from TB each year, and these are active TB cases. Also, in the United States, the CDC reports that only 12,000 cases were reported in the U.S. in 2008, which is when I have the most recent numbers. And they are decreasing here continually in the United States. They're not decreasing as fast as we would expect them to due to some drug-resistant varieties, but they are decreasing. But CDC and the World Health Organization both report that these numbers are increasing elsewhere in the world. And as travelers come to the United States, if you have a patient that has recently been traveling outside the United States or has recently entered the United States, you may suspect, based on their symptoms and their travel history, that they might have come in contact or brought TB back with them. Transmission, well, there's two things to think about. Latent versus active TB. Latent TB is not infectious. When a person becomes infected with TB, the body in a healthy person is often able to fight off that infection to some extent. But because of the nature of the TB, the Mycobacterium tuberculosis, that particular bacteria, the body is able to wall off a pocket of that bacteria and keep it localized, in which case it does not infect, is not able to actively spread. But that barrier becomes weakened when we become weakened. And when our immune systems become at risk, these walls can fail and tuberculosis can begin to thrive in our different body systems. Now, we think most often about pulmonary tuberculosis, where the infection has occurred in the lungs, and that's because the most the disease is transported in an aerosolized form and transmitted from patient to patient. But that transmission usually occurs via the pulmonary and respiratory route. However, TB can affect any system in the body. It's just that if it infects another system and flares up there, it's not going to be readily transported because there's no way to get out of the body easily for the bacterium. However, should understand that the anytime you break the surface of the skin in a patient with an infection of another system, that once during surgeries, during autopsy procedures, the bacteria can spread once it becomes open to the air, and that aerosolized anything that would aerosolize the bacteria could put it into the air and transmit it. So that there are ways to transmit it other than from alive patients with pulmonary tuberculosis, but it is very rare, if not unknown. I mean, there's unclear whether there's actually been any cases of that. So droplet transmission, infectiousness, the things that determine whether you become infected are the same things that determine with any infectious illness. But just to review, we have droplet transmission through the air, infectiousness of the individual, the virulence of the particular strain of bacteria, and the duration of time in which you're in contact with that person. So you may inhale small numbers of the bacteria, but not enough to cause an infection. Your body can fight off a lot of things if there's not a large number of bacteria. The longer you're there, the number of bacteria the person is actually expelling from their respiratory system, and then the virulence of the particular bacteria. The drug resistance affects the treatment. So someone gives you is a carrier of drug-resistant TB, it does not affect the transmissibility of the bacteria. It only will affect the resistance to treatment and our ability to combat this particular bacteria. Testing and diagnosis, we're going to look at, let's start with patients with active TB. If you suspect active TB based on signs and symptoms, this patient's going to be giving sputum cultures. They'll be blood drawn, we'll be getting CBCs and other blood work, including liver enzymes, creatinine, and some others. Chest x-ray may be performed to look for the typical nodular signs that we see in the lungs from a TB patient. Because of that walling up, the body actually forms nodules around TB infection in the lungs, and those nodules do show up on a chest x-ray. Signs and symptoms we need to watch out for are patients with a persistent cough greater than 3 weeks in length, patients exhibiting consistent weight loss, hemoptysis, that's blood coming up, coughing up bloody mucus, patients exhibiting fatigue, weakness, fever, chills, night sweats are all signs and symptoms of an active TB infection. So be aware of that. And if you have a patient like that, you should have access to your respiratory precautions and protection for yourself, which is an N95 respirator mask or higher level of respiratory protection. Latent TB, well, most healthcare professionals, in fact, all should be getting an annual MAN2 test. This is an intradermal injection. I inject that little bubble of 4 units of the tuberculin active protein or whatever it is under the skin. That is then read 42 to 72 hours later, and we're looking for anything greater than a 5 millimeter induration. Now, we're not talking about the area of erythema. The redness, we're looking at the area of raised bumpy area of the skin around the injection site. If it's less than 5 millimeters, in most patients, that's not a sign of infection. In fact, in patients that are healthy and not otherwise at risk, we can change that. And so depending on your immune status and your other concomitant risk factors, up to 10 millimeters or 15 millimeters of an induration area could be signs of an infection. So we need to really look at how far localized reaction spreads. And that has to be read by a medical professional. RNs are usually tasked with that job, and that would be something you would need to educate yourself about if that would be something that would fall within your scope of practice. Treatment and care. Well, if you have either latent or active tuberculosis, we're going to be treating you with a drug cocktail, a variety of specific antibiotic treatments and drug treatments focused on fighting this bacteria. And it's going to be a long process, 6 to 9 months, as long as maybe up to a year. The initial treatment is 2 months on this entire drug cocktail, and then 4 to 6 months or longer on a combination of the INH and RIF. The isoniazid and the rifampin are the two that we stay on the longest. I'm not going to go into all the side effects. That can be a separate drug episode and maybe sometime in the future, but you can look these up in your drug your drug guides and check with your pharmacist. You should be making sure you have the information for your patients and understand reactions to these medications. But it's a long course of treatment, and of course, we have to make sure patients are compliant, so we need to educate them and work on that. Treatment may be slightly different for different patient populations, and especially the HIV-positive, pediatric, pregnant, and other at-risk patients. That will be specific to the patient, and there's a lot of different factors that come into that. But anything that would reduce the immune system or immune response, would we'd want to be taking care of this. Also, patients with liver function problems are going to be monitored very carefully, and we may have to adjust the treatment program because of their liver status. So because of this drug cocktail being a little, you know, toxic, just like any drug is in too large of amounts, anything that reduces our ability to metabolize, such as problems with our livers, could cause additional issues. Also, for some patients, surgery, removal of the infected areas of the lungs may be an option, or infected areas of the body may be an option. So understand that that could be a treatment option in the extreme. What about infection control and prevention? Well, we need to detect that we have a suspected TB case and recognize it for what it is, to both protect the patient and family members and the public at large, as well as ourselves as health professionals. So you need to be aware of this. You need to take appropriate airborne precautions. A respirator is necessary. You've heard of N95 particulate masks. The N95 refers to the size allowed through the particle barrier, and it can be N95 or higher, N100, or it goes on up. Those respirators are just a few dollars a piece. But the most important thing is they must be properly fit tested. If you are not familiar with how to properly wear one of these respirators, it's not just like putting a surgical mask on. These respirators are uncomfortable. Over time, you have to replace them. They're a one-time use device, because as your moisture from your exhalation humidifies the air and dampens the material, it reduces the effectiveness of the mask at providing a barrier. And over time, you'll need to replace it with a fresh mask. Treatment, monitoring, and education is very important of your facility staff, patient, family, and coworkers. Anybody that's been in contact with this patient, if they have an active infection, is potentially exposed and needs to be tested and possibly put on some kind of prophylactic treatment regimen. So you need to be able to reach out and educate, and this becomes a community health issue as well. And you need to have a respiratory protection program for your facility, or if you're going into people's homes, you should have a respiratory protection program for you as an individual health worker going into the field. I urge you to follow up on the additional resources I have in the show notes for this episode. There are links there to the World Health Organization site, which has excellent information on TB worldwide, and the Centers for Disease Control has great information, including a selection of continuing education. So if you're looking for Con Ed resources, the CDC would be an excellent option for you for this and a lot of other things. So if you're looking for a Con Ed on TB, there's about 6 hours, I think, total that you get credit for, and it's something you go through on your own at your own speed, and you can then use the application to sign up for Con Ed credit at the end, and it's recognized by the American Nurses Association, so should be available and used anywhere in the United States. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you need to check back in for the show notes for everything discussed in this episode. All of the news items, tip files, and other links mentioned are all available in the show notes for this and every other episode. And you need to follow up on the information, because I can provide only general information here. It's your job to follow the links and look at the resources and see how they apply to your own scope of practice. I'll do my job here and get you as much information as I can. It's your job to follow up, make sure that the information gels with what you know and what you're supposed to be doing in your area. I'd like to urge all of you to comment and get back in touch with me here at The Nursing Show. You can reach me, of course, by leaving comments over at nursingshow.com. There are comment links at the bottom or near the top of every single article. You can also reach me by email, comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also get a hold of me over at Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. Time to wrap up the show with some PodSafe music, again from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This is a song from an artist by the name of Mike McGill. I think we've played it before here on the show, called Southern California. If you like what you hear, you'll find a link to Mike's site in the show notes. Also, a link to purchase this song and others from Mike over at the iTunes store. You know, it's a great way to show your support. So go ahead and click on that iTunes button and pick up Mike's song. I think it's 99 cents or maybe it's $1.29. But, you know, less than the cost of a soda or a cup of coffee, and you can show your support for these excellent artists who share their music with podcast listeners just like you. That's it. I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic. I want to remind all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Came out to visit some years ago. I fell in love, now wouldn't you know. Was greeted back home with 3 feet of snow. Note to self, it's time to go. Why not become another statistic? I knew back home they'd all go ballistic. Another transplant, let's be realistic. Only I was out. Of Southern California, back east they used to warn ya. They'd say that's the land of the fruits and nuts. All of that talking smack of the wet left coast that's gonna fall off the map. But now that I'm here, I can't go back. So I moved out west, oh what a pity. Found a Southern Cali girl, oh she's so pretty. I thought I'd write this cute little ditty of America's finest city. In Southern California, back east they used to warn ya. They'd say that's the land of the fruits and nuts. All of that talking smack of the whack left coast, how everyone's on crack. But now that I'm here, I can't go back. Let's talk about the weather. How can we talk about the weather? Every day is oh so nice here in paradise. Just you and me on the 163. Heading to our favorite spot by the sea. I'll stop for coffee and you'll get some tea. Tonight there will be no TV. Another sunset, one for the ages. Another chapter, just turn the pages. Another gorgeous day, well what can I say? I'll never ever move away. From Southern California, back east they used to warn ya. They'd say that's the land of the fruits and nuts. All of that talking smack of the wet left coast that's gonna fall off the map. But now that I'm here, I can't go back. Now that here.